Blog Talk Radio.
Glad you're with us this evening. We're going to be continuing our conversation about life after life, looking at the African and Asian traditions. So please join us, 516-387-1741 or blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing. So this is the 10-year incarnation of Dimensional Healing, founded by Ma'a of the Fig Tree and Yah Elohim in 2006. So those who have been hanging with us for all these years, we're grateful. And for those who are new to the Community Love Power / Dimensional Healing family, we're grateful. We have wonderful things in store, and we trust that you will maintain the connection. So as always, as we start our program, we raise our consciousness about things that are going on out in the world that may or may not be talked about by the mainstream media. So we're going to do that this evening. We're going to start by raising our awareness about the Space Fence program. Are you aware of the Space Fence program? A program that's being put into place by the several governments, along with Lockheed Martin, that basically provides 100% surveillance. We think we have it already, but the Space Fence program is going to take it to another level. So the analogy was given for the Skynet, for those who remember the Terminator. So this would be a version of that, and what happens when they become self-aware. Just a few minutes and listen about the Space Fence program, and then we will bring in our co-host, Dr. Jata, so that we can explore life after life.
A quote by Alana Freeland, quote, "The key idea for the Space Fence is about surveillance beyond comprehension all the way down to the DNA." End quote. Lockheed Martin, one of the world's largest military industrial contractors, is leading the development of a space fence to surround planet Earth with a new breed of high-frequency satellite communications. The ostensible purpose is to provide the U.S. Air Force with the ability to identify and track objects and space junk, and to detect space events. However, the system will also provide an unprecedented level of surveillance over the entire planet. Construction is underway on Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands to build the Space Fence, a sophisticated system that will dramatically improve the way the U.S. Air Force identifies and tracks objects in space. The Space Fence will use gallium nitride-powered S-band ground-based radars to provide the Air Force with uncued detection, tracking, and accurate measurement of space objects, primarily in low Earth orbit. The locations and higher wave frequency of the new Space Fence radars will permit the detection of much smaller microsatellites and debris than current systems. Additionally, Lockheed Martin's Space Fence design will significantly improve the timeliness with which operators can detect space events, which could present potential threats to GPS satellites or the International Space Station. The flexibility and sensitivity of the system will provide coverage of deep space geosynchronous orbits, while maintaining the surveillance fence. A promotional video from Lockheed Martin touts the benefits and capabilities of the Space Fence. Version 1.0 of the Space Fence, dubbed Air Force Space Surveillance System, went live in 1961, and came offline in 2013 in preparation for the new version, which will be able to use S-band radar, and will track a larger number of small objects than previous space radars, about 200,000 objects, and make 1.5 million observations.
And so that computer-generated, artificially intelligent recording there, that's an AI itself, talking about the Space Fence program. So basically what it is another degree of surveillance, as if we needed more. So I put into the chat room the link, but you could go to Lockheed Martin's website and talk and read, I should say, about the Space Fence program. Actually, they have live video and things on their site touting the benefits of the space fence that would be primarily for defense and the ability to track objects and space debris. So my question is, so what happens if they see an asteroid coming? Is it really going to make a difference? I would love to hear your answer to that question. So as we move on, we're going to launch into our topic and soon open up the line for our co-host, Dr. Jata. And so what we're going to be talking about for today's program is reincarnation in the African and Asian traditions. In the previous program on Wednesday, we started looking at the concept of life after life. What happens when we die? What happens when we are starting to leave the body, et cetera. And then also we looked at what do we say to someone that we know is making transition. And then further to that, we also talked about what you would say to someone whose loved one is making a transition. So we encourage you to catch the archives of that program if you didn't get it. And that's at our site, blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing. The only way you could get archives is online. Unfortunately, they're not available by phone. But if you really want it, you can give me a call and I'll arrange to get it to you as an MP3 because I can download it and send it to you. And so I wanted to start because a couple of times in the development of this program, I wanted to talk about my own experience, but it never arose. So right as we before we open the line for our co-host, I wanted to share just two experiences that have me thinking a certain way, and I would love to get your insight because I would love more clarity. And the first experience was about me. Okay, and there's several that I've had, but in the observance of the time frame of this program, I'm only going to share two. And one was when I flatlined. So when I clinically flatlined, I had the experience of not being in my physical corporeal body, but my consciousness was intact. I was aware of what was happening. I was aware of who I was and where I was, which my physical body was laying in the bed, and the rest of me, the real me, was surrounded by a love that is completely indescribable. There's nothing on the earth plane that even approximate the love that I felt in that state of consciousness, complete acceptance, complete love. I didn't have to do, be anything different. I didn't have to act a certain way or be a certain way or dress a certain way or eat a certain way. All I had to do was be in that state of love, and I was completely accepted. And once I had that experience, it changed my life forever. It was about 23 years ago that I had that experience, and it really took me into another way of looking at life and human sojourn on the planet. I am open to, and I am absolutely open to other people's thoughts about what that experience was. It ranges everything from that was just biochemistry to that was a bona fide spiritual experience. I would love to get your insight. And the second one is about my son, who's 26 years old, and for the first 3 years of his life, he talked in a very matter-of-fact way about his previous life. He talked about how he died in his previous life. He talked about it, and he had never heard about it from me, and there was no one in the environment that would know of those things on those intimate levels about which he spoke. When he went got to be about 5 or 6 years old and started going into the school system, he got shut down. And when he was talking like that, he got shut down so fast, people did not know how to respond to that. So he learned early on only to talk about those things with me. And then as he got more and more immersed in the school and the more external world, he stopped talking about that. So, I would love to get your insight on what that's about. And so what I'm going to do now is open the line for our co-host, Dr. Jatta, and let's introduce him, as he actually needs no introduction. Welcome, Dr. Jatta.
Greetings.
Thank you for coming and being a part of the Community Love Power show this evening. We love your insights. And we had a great program on Wednesday, and the insights that you shared with us, and we listened to some clips, Islam, Hamza Youssef, and the afterlife, et cetera. We talked about death and dying, and you gave some really beautiful insights about being present. So I thought maybe we could start the program this evening talking about being present. We had a conversation a little earlier on about being present in the moment. Do you remember what we were saying?
Maybe you can give me a synopsis.
Okay. We were talking about kind of reviewing the program that we did on Wednesday, where we started the conversation about death and dying. And you made the very powerful point that it's about being present. It's about being in the moment. It isn't about you know, scripting something to say. And then that extrapolated to the point that we should always be present and in the moment. And our relationships actually don't change if we're having a sincere connection. The physical circumstances may change. The person may be ill or, you know, making their transition. But the relationship doesn't change with that person if we are in the present with that person and with the situation.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I think a lot of times we get information, big feedback here. We get information a lot of times and we regurgitate the information. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm not hearing any feedback.
Okay. There's a lot of feedback on
my end. If you have the computer and the phone close to each other, you're going to get feedback.
Okay.
If the computer is on the program, logged into the program.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Let me shift my location a little bit. Okay. A lot of times in life, we get information. And we regurgitate information. We don't take information and simmer it down to ourselves and make our own conclusions. Very, very bad line. I don't know what's happening.
You may have to hang up and call back in.
Yeah, let me try that. Thank you.
If you're having, so we'll just do that. Allow him to hang up in a couple of minutes. So meanwhile, I'm going to share this. Peaceful greetings from Yah Elohim. Thank you for listening to the Community Love Power Show. After a nearly two-year hiatus as Dimensions of Quantum, we have returned in a new incarnation with a new co-host, Dr. Jata Rahim, and we are increasingly excited about the possibilities for the program. We have approximately 90,000 listens in live and archive programs. Our listenership is international. Obviously, our listenership is progressive and open-minded when you look at the topics that we discuss and the guests that we feature. We invite you to become a sponsor of our program since we are. And we're going to pick up that thought, of course, because we definitely invite you to become a sponsor. But we've got Dr. Jata back on the line. How's the sound now?
Sounds good so far.
Okay, great. So we can pick back up with that thought in terms of regurgitating things, the information
yes.
that we may get out there somewhere out there.
Leading to the conclusion that we gain information a lot of times and we just regurgitate the information without actually sifting out and making our own conclusions. So therefore, we really don't understand things in life because we don't really meditate and ponder on things. If we do become more analytical and taking things to heart, we become present within ourselves when we get more understanding of life. I'm getting the feedback again. So all be to say, if we are centered within ourselves about the life we're living, we wouldn't have to have a scripted dialogue with somebody or anybody. We will be present within ourselves and realize that life is on many levels that we don't understand. So being present, even with whoever you're with at the time, is really, I think, the essence of life. So therefore, if you are present with a child, you're present with a child. If you're present with a friend, you're present with them. If you're present with somebody that's making a transition, you're being present with them. And it's for us to observe all the presentations that we're in. So I
imagine that in the short term that it's about being It's the current buzzword, mindful. That's not one of my favorite words, but aware, completely present of what's happening within our environment, and that includes the interaction with whomever that connection may be. So that leads me into the conversation of, since we reviewed what we talked about last week, what if those relationships and connections last more than one lifetime? What if my mother situation, you know, me being the daughter of my mother, is in the balance of a power relationship? Perhaps I was her boss or whatever in a previous relationship or in a previous connection, because there's many cultures on the planet that subscribe to the perspective that we are not just here for this one life, and that the connections that we have are the ultimate playing out of us working out our karmas between each other as we evolve towards the Almighty, towards Source. Our soul eventually merges with the Almighty, and we are freed from the cycle of birth and death. But it comes through learning, remembering, and relearning to be unconditionally loving, which is our natural state, which is the state that I described when I flatlined. So we have all these different experiences on the planet that kind of take us in another direction from that unconditionally loving state. And so these different birth processes, these different birth experiences, and these different relationships in which we experience the souls in different ways allows us to ultimately return to God, the Almighty, and merge in the bliss. So that's kind of sort of like the Asian perspective. And the African perspective, we're actually going to review it with clips and different research, is that it's the ancestors. And so we, as we are born and reborn, we are often the ancestor that comes again. And so people often look for in the face or the mannerisms, et cetera, of another person, of the baby, someone who has passed. And so there's the tradition that they're able to recognize who that soul is. Then we have, for example, in Buddhism, the different Buddhist saints, lack of a better word, that's not the actual word, that when they're looking for even the Dalai Lama, they search for a child that is born with whatever the characteristics, and when they identify, that child becomes the next Dalai Lama. So these are just a synopsis of the various ways in which much of the world views the rebirth of the soul or reincarnation. So we want to take a look at that. We're going to take a look at one case. And this one has a little bit of prominence, and it is so-called documented. It's out of the Hindu tradition. And then comments. I'd love to get your comments. 516-387-1741. Or you could go into our chat room, blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing. Unfortunately, email is not up. So if you want to reach us, I won't be able to receive an email, but you can certainly dial in or join the chat.
Thousands of tales of reincarnation exist in India. On the 11th of December 1926, a girl is born in Delhi. For Hindus, she was to become living proof of their beliefs. Her name was Shanti Devi. Until the age of 4, she never spoke. When she did, her first words were explosive. She told her mother that her home was not in Delhi, but in a town called Mathura, 140 kilometers away. She had lived there in her past life. Her name was Lugdi, and her husband was a man called Kiranath Chobe. Shanti was able to describe the town in astonishing detail, even though she had never been there. She could even remember how she died, giving birth to her son 7 years earlier. For 2 years, Shanti's parents dismissed her words as fantasy. In the end, her mother decided she could no longer ignore her daughter's vivid descriptions. So one of Shanti's uncles traveled to Matra to investigate her claims. What he found seemed to confirm her story. There was a clothmaker living in the town. His wife, Lugdi, had died in childbirth the year before Shanti Devi was born. His name was Kedarnath Chobe. Was Shanti, his wife, reborn? Dr. Ravat is one of India's leading specialists on reincarnation. He has spent much of his life retracing Shanti's story and recalls Kedarnath's first encounter with her.
When Kedarnath came to Delhi, and there were a lot of people very curious to know whether Shanti had been talking all nonsense or there is truth in it. But when in the morning, Kedarnath very openly and clearly stated that I am 100% convinced she is Lugdi, the whole thing spread like fire, and hundreds people used to come to see this child.
In the 1930s, India was in turmoil as the country struggled for independence from British rule. Hindus and Muslims clashed violently. Mahatma Gandhi, a Hindu, was seeking a peaceful solution. He moved Devi's story center stage in the wider struggle.
At the same time, India has many people from many other countries.
And so, it's not necessary to play the entire clip in order to get the concept of Shanti Devi and what we were talking about in terms of the various ways that these experiences happen, and there are countless experiences of that nature all over the world. A lot of them are documented out of India, but there's quite a few in the U.S., in the North American continent, in South America, and even before the advent of the internet, there was access to these type stories. So I wanted to query our co-host and ask him what else could be at play here. Is it the obvious? Is it the fact that the traditional cultures around the planet, indigenous, didn't even name the indigenous people of North and South America, that subscribe to these perspectives? What else could this be? And how does Islam really deal with the concept of reincarnation?
I just got reactivated back on the line. I lost connection again tonight. It's probably the fall season where connections are a little dubious, being the fall, and metals connect things. I don't know what happened. So I didn't hear. I just came on in your last sentence that you just mentioned there. I missed the whole clip and everything.
Okay, well, the clip was Shanti Devi, and was talking about a young girl that was born, talking about her previous lifetime. and that she had just died in childbirth, and she had a son, and she, for the first 4 years of her life, she didn't speak at all. So when she first started speaking, this was the conversation that she was speaking with. And so her parents and family ignored her for the first 2 years, but 2 years in, because she has such a consistent story, they decided to investigate her story. So her uncle, I think, or her brother, some male member of her family, traveled to where she was supposed to have been from and did indeed find the person that she was supposed to have been married to. And then she herself was taken there, and she was able to identify her son that she had died in child, you know, giving, died having in childbirth, and able to identify her sister, who at that time was, you know, was a young, much younger woman. So that was this essence of the clip. I didn't play the entirety of it, but I was asking because, you know, one, the Hindu, because this is a, out of the Hindu cosmology, would just allude to that and say, well, there's your proof. There's your proof of reincarnation. And of course, there are countless, just uncounted cases, and also in the U.S. And then I also spoke on Edgar Cayce, who is a U.S. born, called the Sleeping Prophet, and he was able to read the incarnations of the soul and talk about ailments, etc., that were occurring in the present life, and he was able to erase those ailments by regressing the person back to previous lifetime in which that particular trauma happened that caused him to have that illness or imbalance in the present lifetime. So my question was, what is your take on that? How does Islam address these type of experiences that people talk about having? You know, what's your comment? What do you see? Is there something else going on that we're not aware of? Are there other planes of existence that we're not privy to? What could these experiences be described to be?
The creator is all-knowing and all-wise. I'm not one to profess that I know everything. There are billions of people living now, and there are billions of people that lived before. Foolish for me to say that that's incorrect or what that may be. Wow, such a bad line again. I don't know what's happening. It's a very, very bad line again.
Okay, you're coming in loud and clear with me, but I don't know how other people are experiencing you. Let me check the phone, because I have the phone here. Say something.
Okay, I think there's 7 billion people living now. I don't know how many more will live after I'm gone. And I don't know how many has lived before me. As far as things of the many, many things I don't understand, I haven't experienced it myself. Because I haven't experienced it myself, I don't disregard it. If there are a billion people living in India, or how many Hindu people there are living in the world, they may have knowledge that I don't have knowledge of. So I'm just going to rest my case there. I wouldn't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's incorrect, because, you know, the Creator is all wise, all knowing. Can do whatever the Creator wishes whenever He wishes. So if that's happening, and fine. I can't refute that.
Okay, yeah, so, you know, that's a great comment or perspective, because we're operating from a smaller knowledge base than what is existing in the universes, in the galaxies, and the dimensions. We're only the tip of the iceberg, something like 4% of all manifestation in this universe alone, we're only privy to 4%. 96% we have no access to with the senses and the modalities that we have. So that's just some little statistics, which are just numbers, but it helps to give us a concept or idea of how much we don't know and how much we have not been privy to. And so that being said, we want to look at that whole, because one of the things that we concluded on the previous program is that place of transition when we are moving, it's just like birth. If anyone has ever been present for birth, that is a powerful vortex when a person is coming in. There are energies that are moving, and I have to literally call it a vortex, as that soul that has been placed in that body is coming through the birth process. And similarly, when a person is departing, there is a powerful vortex. And we came to the conclusion on the previous program that it's a very powerful and blessed experience to share and be present with a person. So all of these things that we have been taught to be afraid of are things that we have the opportunity to grow through. So let's consider that we can actually conquer this. We can conquer these fears. These fears that we have, or that some people have or express, actually come from lack of knowledge and lack of information. But what we can do is be present and learn to live life in the fullest. Let's listen to a little bit of conversation about moving past fear, panic, and death. If I can get my thing to stop jumping around. Nope.
I will say this in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is 90, going on 99 years old, God willing, in 2016. I hope somebody doesn't come to me and say that they're sorry for my loss, because I wouldn't have lost a thing when my mother makes her move.
Right.
I have gained exponentially. My life has been a gain. So these scripted things that's spoken, I don't know if we really digest them in the moment, what they mean. Because I would say, well, I haven't lost. What have I lost?
Right.
I have gained everything. Everything that from my existence I've gained through that. So I'm grateful. I think it would be better if somebody said something like, as opposed to "I'm sorry for your loss," it would be, "How grateful are you?"
Yes.
That's just a subjective view of me digesting things that's presented to me in this life and making it me, as opposed to just regurgitating. Because in my soul, I know that everything is on loan. In my soul, I know that everything that I have, my hands, my eyes, they're on loan. I didn't manufacture them. And I know that everything that I've seen is for a time. The only thing that will endure is the all-purpose creator that manufactured every moment of every time. So I think that, this is subjective, that I have to show the appreciation for the gift of life by living a virtuous life, for the gratitude of being here and sharing my time with everybody. The unknown to me is unknown. My present situation now is all that I can comprehend. I haven't comprehended those situations. I'm not refuting them, because foolish would I be if I refuted those things. So
tend to think that if I dwell in the present and I'm good to my neighbor, I'm good to myself, I have a life of compassion and consideration, whatever happens forthwith, I will be fine.
Amen. Yes, you will.
Because the unseen is something I don't know about the unseen. And it's an interesting dialogue. It's an interesting debate. Again, I would have to digest that and look to my present situation and see how will that affect my life now.
Yes.
Would I take principles from that and galvanize it to my life to make the future better?
Well, inshallah, those experiences are to make a better person. Because
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Something so profound doesn't get lost even 50 years later.
Whoever's had those experiences, they have to look at it as something that they have to galvanize and sifter it down and make themselves better from that.
Yes.
You know, those that didn't have that experience should use that knowledge for themselves also to make themselves better, as opposed to coming up with theories about, oh, that's hogwash, or that doesn't make sense, or whatever it may be.
Well, it really is about remaining open, because as we just noted, we know so little. There's so much more to be known than the little knowledge that we have, even after a lifetime or a generation or two or three or four generations on the planet, living and seeing the changes of over perhaps 100 years. So there is so much that we don't know and that we have not had access to. Let's take a moment and ponder this.
You are the master. Mine is your servant. That's the correct relationship. Sometimes I say, don't try and stop your thoughts. Allow them full range to express themselves. But don't identify. Try and see. Just be an audience to your own thinking that's going on by itself. You say, okay, I didn't order a takeaway of thoughts. Okay. They come, eyes open, okay. And then something panics and go, oh no, you know, I wish, which also adds to fuel to that fire, because it's like resistance. And it seems sometimes some negative aspect of mind grows with resistance. So you watch this, be aware of this. Don't say, okay, want to stop it, although it's natural to have this desire for a minute. But if that desire come also, just let that join the fire like everything else. You stay out of it as much as possible. Maybe it might feel like, you know, oh my God, this is even worse, I can't do it, this is going to really, it really is overtaking me now. Then be fully overtaken. Allow yourself to say, okay, overtake me. But I'm only permitted just to look, not to interpret, not to judge, you know, because this is what's being pulled up here. The sap is rising, you know, to identify, you know, it's me, you know, I wish I'd stop this. And it's, the fire is crackling now, it's on full bonfire. But let it happen and stay out of it, stay in your own neutrality. At first, like I say, it may feel like it's impossible. But then you recognize that this voice that says it's impossible is also firewood. You stay there and see. You can say, don't try to prevent. Okay, throw your best punch. Burn my world. At the beginning, sometimes the inquiry is being used more as a pacifier or a painkiller or something. So there is still, it's not true. It's as though you're looking for rescue, and I don't want you to look for rescue. because then you are automatically in the position of a victim. You understand? You're just the eyes looking and the body feeling. Let the body feel the presence energetically of fear and noise and find your peace in it. How are you going to do it? By not having any desire. Don't say, no, I wish this would stop. No, don't wish it would stop. Let it just be there. Just like you are only a visitor through your eyes alone. Be alive only through your eyes alone. And say, come, okay, keep coming. You know, and watch the crackle. It's okay. Do it. It's your way out of this. So something comes out of this experience that you're not just going around trying to put out fires. You are simply just aware of yourself, not aware of that, because this is where the power goes. We keep wanting to change the picture. You keep wanting to change the picture, which is a projection. So don't try and change the picture or the one who is looking. Don't try and change anything. Just be present without identifying. And let the feeling take over.
So again, about being present. Okay, and when we're having experiences that are fearful to us or uncomfortable to us, separate from that and observe and see what's going on all levels. Note the emotions, note the fear, and embrace it and let that be part of the experience, because then we reach the point where we recognize that fear program kicking in, and as it kicks in, we can say, oh, that's that fear thing. I know that, and we can keep moving. And so we're actually getting close to the top of the program. I wanted to leave enough time for us to talk a little bit about the buying club. And I know I keep harping on that, and it's because it's a very important thing for us to be able to pool our resources. When we get into the mindset of doing our shopping and getting it out of the way, and we get so busy that we've gotten to the point where it's very difficult for us to pool our energy. But once we do it and we build momentum in that direction, it starts to take on an energy that allows us to experience more abundance. So all we've got to do is change the program. Believe me, I know how much of a challenge it is to change the program. I know how busy we all are, and what a huge effort it takes to work with others on even the smallest thing. But this disconnect that we are experiencing is very important for us to work diligently to stay connected. And one of the ways that we always end up having to fight against is, and from the perspective of the economic battle, so to speak, or the economic challenge to be able to leverage the resources that we have. And leveraging our resources is a huge part of abundance. So we have many things that we are purchasing that are household items, and we encourage you to join us. There's a website, which is ujamaapurchasingcollective.webs.com, where a partial list of what we are purchasing is listed. Anything that you would like to add to the list, just contact us on the website or through Dimensional Healing 85. Well, let me give this email, the People's Clinic for TOM at gmail.com. That's the People's Clinic, the number 4, T like Tom, O like Oscar, M like Mary at gmail.com. And so therefore, we can pool our resources, work together, and leverage our dollar. So say you could take $20 and buy twice as much for that $20 than you could just you alone. So let's make it happen. It works. It actually works. I've done this a few times. So Dr. Jatta, as we get a little bit closer to the top of the hour here, what's your heartfelt message for this evening, for today's program?
The heart can only be contented when we remember the Creator. In doing, somebody may ask, well, how do we do that, practically speaking?
most of the nations of the world have some type of mantra that we mantra. To the mantra will galvanize the mind and the heart together with the breath. So there's a synchronicity there. The mind, as we know, is on a video loop. The reactive mind, it just keeps thoughts keep arising and arising. That's just what it does. So if we are conscious of the breath, and somebody may ask, how do I do that? It's going to be a process of doing some type of breath and movement work. As I say, it could be singing, it could be Qigong, it could be Tai Chi, it could be prayer. But all of that is designed so that when you get up from doing that task, you get up focused and centered within your heart, mind, and body. If we're there in that particular state of remembrance, and there's specific things we could say in the mantra, the heart then will have the presence of the Creator within the heart consciously. And then the reactive mind then wouldn't be carrying us on some labyrinthal path. So I think if we deal with remembrance of in the heart of the Creator in whatever way we can and practice that discipline, we will be finding contentment within our lives.
That's a great heartfelt message, and I so agree with you. My heartfelt message is I love you all to life. I look forward to our next connection. We will be coming back on Wednesday coming up, which I think is the 9th, with a new topic. And stay tuned to our show page, and you'll see what that is. Join our email list by emailing the People's Clinic, the number 4TOM at gmail.com, or go to our website, the People's Clinic, 4TOM.com, and join us. This is a wonderful opportunity. We're growing internationally. We have an international, global, galactic focus, and we would love to have you be a part of the experience. Love you to life. This is Yah Elohim, and we're going to exit today with Anjali Cujo and Malaika. Love you to life. See you on Wednesday in the Gregorian calendar.
Malaika, nakupenda malaika, malaika, nakupenda malaika, na milifanyeje kija na mwezi nyoho. Shindwana mali sinawe, yige kuwa malaika. Yeba, pesa, zasubu waroho nyengu. Nashindwa na malisi na we, ingekuwa malaika. Nashindwa na malisi na we, ingekuwa malaika. Kirege Hukuwa hasa kirege Malaika.